वासुदेवाया। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, the 46th chapter, and I'm supposed to read, I think, text 15 to text 19. Huh? Is that correct? Yeah, chapter 46, text 15 to text 19. Right? That's what the boss said. Okie doke. So I guess we'll chant the first verse together. Responsibly, and then we'll chant the rest of them together, not responsibly. Bojitam paramanena samvistam kashipausukam gatashramam paryaprichat Padasam Vahanadibi Bojitam Paramanena Samdishtam Kashipausukam Gatashramam Paryapritchat Padasam Vahanadibi Bojitam Paramanena Samvishtam Kashipausukam Gatashramam Paryaprichat Padasam Vahanadibi Vaishnavas? Bojitam paramanena Samvishtam pasipausukam Gatashramam prayaprichat Padasam vahanadibi Bojitam paramanena Samvishtam kashipausukam Bojitam paramanena Samvishtam Vaishnavis? Bojitam paramanena Gatashramam prayaprichat Padasam vahanadibi Bojitam paramanena Samvishtam kashipausukam Gatashramam prayaprichat So, I don't know. Okay, I'll chant the word for word here, but then I'd like to chant all the Sanskrit and go back and read all the English, so it kind of makes sense. Bojitam fed. Fed. Parama anena. With first class food. Sangdishtam. Seated. Kashipau. On a nice bed. Sukham. Comfortably. Gata. Relieved. Shramam. A fatigue. Paryaprachat. He inquired. Pada. Of his feet. Samvahana. With massaging. Adivi. And so on. Okay, so now we'll chant 16, 17, 18, and 19 together, just the Sanskrit. Kat, is it up there? Okay. Kachit anga mahabhaga sakana suranandana ashte kushaya patyadi yukto mukta suridvrata dishcha kangso hatak papa sanuga svena papmana sadhunam dharma shilanam Yadunam dvishti aksada api smaratina krishna mataram surida sakin gopanda jam chatam natam gavo vrindavanam girim apyayasyati govinda svajanam sakrit ikshitam Tarhi drakshyama tadvaktram sunasam susmitekshanam. Okay, going back to 15 and reading the English. After Uddhava had eaten first-class food, been seated comfortably on a bed, and been relieved of his fatigue by a foot massage and other means, Nanda inquired from him as follows, purport. Srila Jiva Goswami mentions that Nanda had a servant massage Uddhava's feet, since Uddhava was Nanda's nephew. Text 16. Nanda Maharaj said, "My dear most fortunate one, does the son of Sura fare well? Now that he is free and has rejoined his children and other relatives? Fortunately, because of his own sins, the sinful Kamsa has been killed, along with all his brothers. He always hated the saintly and righteous Yadus. Does Krishna remember us? Does he remember his mother and his friends and well-wishers? Does he remember the cowherd and their village of Vraj, of which he is the master? Does he remember the cows, Vrindavan Forest, and Govardhan Hill? Will Govinda return even once to see his family? If he ever does, we may then glance upon his beautiful face with its beautiful eyes, nose, and smile." Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Now that Krishna has become a prince in the great city of Mathura, Nanda had lost hope that he would come back to live in the simple cowherd village of Vrindavan. But he hoped against hope that Krishna would come back at least once to visit the simple cowherd folk who had raised him from birth. Om Aganatimirandasya Garangana Shalakaya Chakshuran Nelatanjena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Kurativa Chalam Pungam Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tvam Aham Vande Shri Guru Dhinatanam Paramananda Dayanam Shri Chaitanya Vishwanam. So today is also the disappearance of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And in order to understand this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam and also perhaps get time to glorify Gopal Bhatta Goswami, I would like to speak a little bit about what it takes or why Krishna empowers, how he empowers devotees. Because in this Leela, there's two things going on. Uddhava is coming by Krishna's request, on Krishna's request to Vrindavan, to help the Vrajavasis to overcome their grief at Krishna's lack of physical presence. But also, as we've heard before, Uddhava is sent by Krishna to Vrindavan for his own edification, so that he can become aware of the intense devotion and love of the Vrajavasis. And even we'll see as this Leela goes on, each member of the Vrindavan community, or each person in participating in each rasa of the Vrindavan community, teaches him another lesson, another level of devotion to Krishna. And with each one, he gets more and more deeply an understanding of the inconceivable nature of the love of a devotee, until finally seeing the gopis and Srimati Radharani talking to a bumblebee, and, you know, just really intensely starting to comprehend that he doesn't comprehend, that he can't comprehend, that the love and devotion of these residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, and even more especially Srimati Radharani, is beyond comprehension. So although he can, he himself is a great devotee of Krishna, and although he himself has intense love and complete surrender to Krishna, still he understands again and again that there's more to it than meets the eye. There's an intensity of loving devotion that is beyond his ability to enter into and to understand. So from this Leela and so many other pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam and elsewhere, we can examine how Krishna and why Krishna empowers his devotees. Because here, in so many different ways, we heard of yesterday, the day before yesterday, in Madan Mohan Prabhu's class about the spurti occurrence, or the spurti appearance of Krishna in the lives of the Vrajavasis, specifically for Uddhava's, to see Vrindavan and what it looked like when Krishna was there. In the commentary and purport by the other acharyas, there's some by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in particular, but also Jiva Goswami, there's this description of what Vrindavan really looked like. Well, what really is, I don't know which is really, but anyway, what Vrindavan looked like on one side, with cobwebs, and all the houses hadn't been cleaned since Krishna left, and the cooking pots were just left there, and vegetables and grains were just kind of rotting in the storehouse and the godown, and it was very depressing. The devotees were very depressed and very sad. There was no action, no movement going on, standing like painted statues. And then yet, at first glance, Uddhava saw something else. He heard the gopis singing songs about the glorification of Krishna, and he came to Nanda Maharaj's house and was warmly greeted and served nice prasadam, and as it's described here, his feet were massaged by a servant. It's also described that he was served nice prasadam, especially sweet rice, and that sweet rice had been prepared by a servant who understood that if Uddhava walked into the house, because Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda weren't cooking and they hardly were eating anything, that Uddhava would be going hungry after his long travel. So he cooked enough prasadam just for Uddhava. He cooked enough sweet rice and enough prasadam just so he could feed Uddhava. So there were two sides of the picture, in that which was seen by Uddhava at the beginning, and that later realization that everybody in Vrindavan was really suffering from the absence of Krishna. So the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan were empowered by Krishna, were inspired and enlivened by Krishna's presence to teach Uddhava a lesson. He appeared in his spurti form to them and enlivened them. It was like a shock, an electric shock that passed through these otherwise limp and dull persons and enlivened them, brought them back to life for the edification of Uddhava. And Uddhava came also with that purpose given by Krishna to enliven and enlighten the Brajabasis, somehow to inspire them so that they wouldn't be suffering so much. And then we see in other pastimes many, many times, like Arjuna, for instance. Arjuna was also under illusion, but he became an instrument. Krishna told him, nimrita matram bhavasaja sacham, you become my instrument and you fight. And in that fight, Arjuna became almost like supernatural. His skills and his ability to fight these Maharatis became completely empowered by Krishna. He became an instrument of Krishna. And Arjuna understood, and even more so at the end of the later, I'll speak about in a minute, but he understood that from Krishna showing him the universal form, that all these people, they were already killed, and I can become but an instrument. It's not me that's doing this, but it's Krishna that's doing this. And it's already taken care of. All I have to do is surrender. If I can just surrender, then Krishna's purpose will be served, and also my purpose will be served. Uddhava also, Krishna's purpose will be served, and my purpose will be served. And for the Vrajavasis also, they were only concerned with serving Krishna's purpose. That's why they stayed alive. Actually, it's described that they would have left their bodies, but they stayed alive because they thought Krishna may come back, and what will he do if he won't be happy if he sees everybody dead, his mother, his father, Radharani, all the gopis, the cows. So they stayed alive even though they were thinking they would prefer to just give up this mortal existence, even though it wasn't really mortal, but they were thinking that way, that just to give up this physical presence on the earth and become reunited with Krishna on another level, because the pain was so great. So we see also with Srila Prabhupada that he was totally empowered, that he came to the United States with nothing. He had the order of his spiritual master. He didn't know how to ambulate within the American sphere. He didn't know how to use all the equipment that eventually he would offer his service with a dictaphone. Gargamuni Prabhu and Brahmananda tells that when he first got the dictaphone, Gargamuni, I guess, got it for him, and he was reading all the instructions very carefully, how to use this, and he came with the intention of explaining to Srila Prabhupada, this is how you have to do it. This is what this button is, and this is what this button is, and this is how you do it. But Srila Prabhupada said, no, it's okay. I'll figure it out. And he immediately was able to figure out how to use that machine. And in so many ways, how to give Krishna consciousness, we see for our own selves how we rack our brains trying to figure out how to give Krishna consciousness to others, or how to become Krishna conscious ourselves. Sometimes we're... at least I'm not successful at either one, but always thinking about how to do it, trying to figure out how to make it work in 2014, and how to go back to Godhead in this life. But Srila Prabhupada, he was totally empowered by Krishna, and the ideas came to him. Even he prayed when he came on the Jaladuta. He said, just make me like a puppet in your hands. Make me dance as you like. So he understood that he was empowered by Krishna and empowered by the order of his spiritual master, and so he would be able to do it. He would be successful. He said he never felt alone, not even for a moment. He always knew that Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was with him, and that Krishna was with him on the boat, even when his health wasn't good. He had a dream, and it was obvious to him from that dream that Krishna was with him, that it was all going to bear fruit according to Krishna's plan. And we see many other places in the Bhagavatam where seemingly difficult situations turn into wonderful opportunities for becoming Krishna consciousness due to Krishna's intervention, or the intervention of his devotees. So I would like to just spend a few minutes thinking about and talking about what is it that makes us receptive to this empowerment. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, in several different places, in the first verse of the 9th chapter, in the 64th verse of the 18th chapter, Krishna says to Arjuna, I'm speaking this to you, I'm giving this information, I'm empowering you because you are my friend, because you are not envious of me, because I love you. Because I love you. And because you love me, therefore, I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to empower you. It's all going to be all right because you're not envious of me. And you're not envious of others either. You're not under the influence of the modes of material nature. You're free from the desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. You just want to be my servant. So therefore, I will empower you to do that service. And Srila Prabhupada also had that same mentality, that he wasn't envious, he wasn't looking for fame, he wasn't looking for a business opportunity, he wasn't trying for upward mobility, except in the sense of going back to the topmost place of the spiritual world. He wasn't trying to make it in the United States. I remember once we did a drama about Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada was talking to the servant of Srimati Murarji, because Srimati Murarji had realized that Prabhupada was going to America and it was cold in America. And he had never experienced cold weather before. So she told his servant, you take him shopping and go get him whatever he needs. Get him a coat, get him some warm stuff. So when the two of them were walking, the servant says to Srila Prabhupada, wow, Srila Prabhupada, or wow, Swamiji, you're going to America and you'll see the Empire State Building. And you'll see all the big houses and wow, there's so much to see there. Are you gonna go and take advantage of all the sights? And Srila Prabhupada said, I'm not going there to see anything. I'm not going there to take anything. I'm going there to give them Krishna. So he wasn't looking for opportunities for him to enjoy, but he was rather looking for opportunities to render service to Krishna, and therefore he was empowered. And so the Brajbasis, and so Uddhava, and so many other persons from the Leelas of Krishna, all the great devotees, this is their claim to fame, is that they are free from envy and free from the desire for their own sense gratification, and therefore Krishna can use them as an instrument. Krishna can enter into them and allow them to achieve amazing things. And actually, I have to say that to some extent, we experienced that even in the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement. We were discussing recently during the disciples course how during the beginning years of the Hare Krishna movement, persons who had no qualification whatsoever were able to do amazing things, to distribute thousands of books, to open temples in foreign lands, to travel across the globe with no money and no resources, and start Hare Krishna temples and turn people into devotees, thousands and thousands of people into devotees. So it didn't have anything to do, really, maybe from the superficial level. I think Allen Ginsberg made a comment that it was a stroke of genius that Srila Prabhupada arrived in America when he did, because all the hippies were so miserable, and then Prabhupada was able to give them this chanting and they took to it. But it was a stroke of genius on the part of Krishna, who orchestrated the whole thing. He orchestrated the whole thing. Because he was working through Srila Prabhupada as his instrument, and because of Srila Prabhupada's surrender and lack of envy and friendship with Krishna and love of Krishna, he was able to spark that same feeling of affection for Krishna and his service in so many people. It had nothing to do with techniques, although Srila Prabhupada definitely fed lots of prasadam, and he gave the kirtan of the chanting of the holy name, and one could say, well, those were techniques, But Srila Prabhupada didn't consider them techniques. He was just giving Krishna consciousness. Matter of fact, on many occasions, Srila Prabhupada pulled us away from techniques. When we did the road show, people were very interested, and they got pretty expert at the road show. The songs were really good, the musicians were really good, and the show was really good. But Prabhupada, he ultimately called it off. We don't want techniques. We're interested in giving the pure stuff. We want people to come in contact with Krishna and walk away knowing that the goal of human life is to develop love of God. We don't want them to have any other message from the Hare Krishna movement. We should keep it pure. We should keep it focused. When Gop Kumar, on his travels through the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he came to Dwarka. And, you know, he had been looking for his Lord all along in so many different places. And he had gone to Vishnu Loka, you know, the Vaikuntha planets. And now he was in Dwarka. And when he came to Dwarka, he was wearing Gopa clothes. And he was looking for his Lord. He was looking for his worshipable deity. And he had been so many places. He had worshipped the Lord in so many different ways. But he wasn't ever satisfied. And then Uddhava saw him. The Brijbasis couldn't figure it out. They couldn't figure out why he wasn't happy there. I mean, here he was in Dwarka. Krishna was there. And all the opulence of Dwarka was there. And so many wonderful devotees were there. And yet Gop Kumar was still searching. What was he looking for anyway? But they called Uddhava. They thought Uddhava can figure it out. And Uddhava, when he saw Gop Kumar's dress, he knew why he wasn't satisfied. Because he had been in this situation. He had been to Vrindavan. He had seen the love of the gopis and the gopas and Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda. And he was aware of the depth of their love. And he was aware that Aishwarya gets in the way. That all this opulence and all this encumbrance and thinking of Krishna with awe and reverence, it acts as an obstacle in experiencing the highest forms of love of God. So that he took Gop Kumar to his own place, Uddhava's own place, and Rohini was there, and also Narada Muni. Those three, they met with Gop Kumar and they said, "You're in the wrong place, but I can't tell you that in front of anybody here. So what you need to do is you need to keep going, and you need to go to Goloka Vrindavan." And they directed him how to get to Goloka Vrindavan. So Uddhava went there, Gop Kumar went there and resumed his relationship with Krishna as a cowherd boy. So we can understand that when the devotees, and especially when Krishna sees someone's sincerity, their lack of envy, their desire to have a relationship with Krishna, then he enters into their activity. He enters into their mind and heart. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I enter into their heart and I destroy the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. I give them the ability, the intelligence by which they can come to me. And that intelligence comes in many, many different ways. And as they surrender unto me, Krishna rewards them accordingly. So if we're free from any desire for anything but Krishna and Krishna's pleasure, then to the degree that that's there, Krishna reciprocates with us. And the reciprocation comes in the form of this loving relationship, which we see in its pinnacle here in the behavior of both Uddhava and the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan. Now, to do due deference to Gopabhatta Goswami, he also comes from a situation in which he was very empowered. He first met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on his South Indian tour in 1510. And at that time, Gopal then, was only 7 years old. He was 7 years old. And Lord Chaitanya came to the temple of Sri Rangam, And I don't know how many of you have ever been to Sri Rangam. Anybody here ever been? Pushkar. So Sri Rangam is a huge temple. It's the biggest Vishnu temple in India. And in its original state, now it's been outlawed by the government, but it's in its original state, it had rings of residences around the temple where the different orders of life, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishyas, and Sudras, would live. In the inner ring was Brahmins, and then etc., Vaishyas, Sudras, etc. So they were living around the temple, but all of them were completely dedicated to the service of Balaji and under the tutelage of Ramanujacharya. So that, Sri Rangam, Ranganath. I have a clay imprint of the hand of Ranganath. He's laying down, and when I went, they gave me an imprint of his hand. I still have it in Tilak. So anyway. Huh? Yeah, but technically the government has outlawed that. They're not allowed to do that anymore. But whether they do or not, you know, it's not the first law in India that didn't get followed. What? Yeah. Anyway, they're followers of Ramanujacharya, Sri Vaishnavas, generally. And so when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came there, he went into ecstasy in the darshan of Sri Ranga, and he had a wonderful kirtan. And Venkatabhata joined that kirtan and also got infused with the ecstasy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And finally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fainted in ecstasy, and Venkatabhata took him to his house, invited him home, and kept him there. He said, "This is the rainy season now, Chaturmasya. You should stay at my place for 4 months." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu consented, and he stayed at Venkatabhata's house for 4 months. By the way, Bhata, I discovered, maybe you all know, but I didn't know, is a title, not really a name. And it's a title for one who's very scholarly and very learned from South India. So he had another brother, which was Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur. And they heard from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and little Gopal also served and heard from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there was some discussion. He converted them from being devotees of Lakshmi Narayan to devotees of Radha and Krishna. And he gave two arguments to Venkatabhata, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. First, he said, "Well, why is it that Lakshmi is attracted to Krishna? If she's completely satisfied with her relationship with Narayan, then why she's attracted to Krishna?" And the response that Venkata gave was, "Well, it's fine, because Krishna, Narayan, Vishnu, they're all the same. Krishna, Narayan, Vishnu, they're different forms of the same person, so what's the problem with she loves Krishna, she wants to be with her Lord in another form?" And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Well, then how come she wasn't allowed into the rasa dance? She wanted to enter into that rasa dance, but she wasn't allowed to go there." And so then Venkata was stumped. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to him that the reason was because this awe and reverence gets in the way. And Lakshmi didn't want to give up that position. She couldn't follow in the simple mood of the cowherd boys and girls of Vrindavan. And so understanding that and having the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Venkatabhata became a devout disciple of devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Gopal also became such, even at 7 years. Actually, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started to leave, Gopal cried so badly that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agreed to stay for another few days. And eventually he left, telling the boy, "Don't worry." Actually, Gopal Bhatta is described when he was seven, he had a vision of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Krishna. And he saw all the Leela in both Navadvip as Krishna, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu before he took sannyas, and also in Vrindavan. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu blessed him. He said, "Don't worry, now you stay here and you take care of your parents, because they're great devotees, and they'll teach you, and your uncle Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur will also teach you. And then when they pass away, then you come to Vrindavan." And so Gopabhata did that. He came to Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always inquiring. Finally, he was feeling very agitated. He was in Puri, and he said to his disciples, "I'm worried about what's going in Vrindavan. I haven't heard anything in a long time." And just at that moment, he received a letter from Rupa and Sanatan saying, "Gopal Bhatta has arrived. Gopal is here now." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy, and he sent back a messenger with some cloth, his kopan, and a Babaji Vesh dhoti, and also he sent a message to Sanatan and Rupa that you take him as your brother. And so they related to him as if he was their younger brother. They took very good care of him. And Gopal Bhatta was a very renounced person from the very beginning. He just left his parents and immediately became a renunciate in the association of the Goswamis in Vrindavan. And then, of course, we know the story, or we've probably heard the story, of how Radha Raman appeared, because Gopal Bhatta had a desire to worship. All the other Goswamis were worshiping Shilas and things, so he had a dream. And in the dream, he was told to go to Nepal, to the Gandaki River. And so he went to the river, and he put his bag in the river, and 12 shalagrams came into the bag. So he took the bag home, but then when he was home, he was thinking, "I'm really not advanced enough to worship. I should put them back." So he went back, and he put them back in the river, but they kind of jumped back into his bag. And that happened three times. Three times he tried to put the Shilas back, and three times the Shilas came to him anyway. They wouldn't go away. So he thought, well, it must be Krishna's arrangement. Again, Krishna intervenes. He sees a pure devotee. He sees the desire of the devotee. And he facilitates his service by empowering him, by entering into his life and directing him in a very, very pronounced way. So Gopal Bhatta took these Shilas back to his home in Vrindavan, and he was worshiping them, but all in it, he was feeling a little dissatisfied that he didn't have any deity form of Krishna to worship, and especially he was feeling sad because one rich merchant, Anushringa Chaturdasi, he came and he was giving gifts to all the different temples of cloth and crowns and jewels to their deities, but Gopal Bhatta didn't have a form of Krishna that he could offer these things to. So he laid all these things, he got, you know, these things, and he laid them down in front of the Shilas, and he lamented. He said, "You know, I can't really dress you nicely because of you. I can't see your form, but here you take." And then he put his deities to sleep in a basket, his Shilas to sleep in a basket, and he went to sleep. When he woke up in the morning, there were only 11 Shilas. One of them, a Damodar Shila, had manifested himself in the form of Radha Raman. Actually, of just Raman. And Raman is famous for being very small. He's only between 8 and 10 inches tall. And he's very finely carved. He's very beautiful, very detailed. And as we see now, the worship goes on very beautifully in Radharaman Mandir. There's no Radharani, but he acknowledges Radharani's presence by putting a veil and a little crown next to Ramanji. And Gopal Bhatta worshipped Radharaman. He was in concern. He actually had done some seva. He had had some association with another devotee at one point, and that devotee told him, "I'm going to give you my son," because he didn't have any children, and Gopal Bhatta blessed him that he would have a son. He said, "My first son I'll send to you." And so sure enough, when Gopal Bhatta was worshipping Radha Raman, this boy came. His name was Gopinath, and he said, "My father sent me to you, and my service for the rest of my life is to help you in your service." So here is a 10-year-old boy also completely surrendered to the order of his father. "Anything you want, I'll do. You want me to go to Vrindavan? Okay, I went to Vrindavan. I go to Gopal Bhatta, and I say, please accept me as your servant." And his name became Gopinath Pujari. He just served Radha Raman his whole life until he passed away. So we can see from these different pastimes, from the pastimes of the devotees in Chaitanya Leela, from the pastimes of the devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam, from Srila Prabhupada even, and even his devotees, we see people empowered to do completely amazing things. It's hard to understand how Krishna acts through these devotees and changes the world. And we should understand also that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to take advantage of that, to become qualified, to become empowered, and to become empowered so that we could preach the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and become Krishna conscious ourselves by becoming free from the lower modes of material nature and becoming dedicated to the loving service of Sri Sri Radha Shyam and Krishna Balaram and Gaur Nithai. And I'll stop there, and if there's any questions, I'll try to answer. Hare Krishna. Janmashtami. Prabhu. Now you can't talk in the microphone because Krishna broke it to save me. Actually, I was just remembering. We were actually empowered already by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he said that all of us, we should preach Krishna consciousness in every town and village. So we already have the order. We just have to manifest it.
This whole concept of empowerment, and we see in ISKCON's history, also in Srila Prabhupada's life, that there seems to be different phases of empowerment. Like, for instance, before Prabhupada came to America, he tried in so many different ways to spread Krishna consciousness, but externally there wasn't any manifest results. Mm. And also within our movement, we see devotees who go through phases where they got an incredible level of empowerment, and it seems to be withdrawn also.
Sometimes Krishna moves us by adjusting the level of apparent empowerment. He pushes us along. No, I don't want you here. I want you somewhere else. There was one devotee who was a secretary to Srila Prabhupada, and he would type the letters of Prabhupada, and he would make a gazillion spelling mistakes, and Srila Prabhupada fired him. So he was very disturbed that he got fired. But then he went to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, actually, I didn't fire you because of that reason. I knew that this is not really enough for you to do. You can go and preach and make thousands of devotees, and why should you just stay here and type? So, and he did that. He started preaching in one part of the world, and he made he was very empowered. So even in Prabhupada with his devotees, sometimes he would move them along by closing one door, because they wanted to go through that door. Krishna would close that door, Prabhupada would close that door, so they didn't have that many. They would go in the right direction. Anybody else? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.